You're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
4 seconds left.
Good afternoon, everybody. Good evening. Welcome to RBLR Lightning Playoff Edition. I'm Joe Zamataro, filling in for Jake Ricker. Along with me, Matt Gannon. And we got a couple of big games to go over here as we're two games into the first round of the NHL playoffs. Man, it's one of those feelings where, today could have been an absolutely glorious day. It could have been the worst day in 365 days, but I'm feeling pretty good. How are you feeling, Matt?
A lot better than I thought I'd be coming here with after that first game. But I feel pretty darn good. Obviously, it's been a little while since we've seen everybody here. We didn't really get to do a pre-playoff video or anything like that, but we're here now. We wouldn't leave you abandoned. I'm excited to talk about these games. I'm giddy for the next one and giddy to talk about the first two.
There's so much to get into. I don't even know analytically which way I feel about so many different things, because I feel like it's almost like the tale of two different teams. Thank you all for joining us. Be sure to like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, and of course join us in the comments, which I can already see that we have a comment and it's on our appearance. Both of us looking a little tan. Yeah, you got a little bit of sun yourself over the past week as well, huh?
It's the greatest time of the year right now. You know, we did sun and fun last week. Just been out nice. In the sun for everything. I think I might even still got a. Oh yeah, I've got the tan line there as well.
You're rocking it.
I've been outside almost all day every day these last couple of weeks, and I don't intend on changing that. Joe, you were in parts unknown, weren't you?
I went to a destination wedding in St. Lucia. There's plenty of sun down there too. Actually, funny enough, the first 2 days completely overcast. It was a beach resort, and you could basically lay at the poolside, all inclusive. So whatever you want to do by the pool all day long. The next day, though, I mean, St. Lucia's pretty far south. It's pretty close to the equator, and there's a lot of sun the next day. I'll say that. Luckily, with the Sicilian Italian genes I have, the red turns to tan very fast. But I was also pretty red. Speaking of pretty red, I got to watch the Lightning games, basically in St. Lucia. There's some Canadian fans that were there as well, and they don't tan nearly as well. Man, they look like lobsters. You can pick them out of a crowd so easily.
You said that it's a pretty red, but I don't really think it's very pretty on them. Neither is the color of that. The red on their jerseys, but no, St. Lucia.
We're matching their jerseys for sure.
it's got to be one of my favorite Caribbean islands. Dude, I'm very, very jealous of you. Sun and Fun was cool and all, but I'd trade my week for yours.
We'll have to plan a weekend sometime and just head out as a boys trip.
Ooh, let's do it.
All right, so in the meantime, let's get into these games. I think we should just go right for it. I don't think that... I don't know. I don't think that these teams played the same game back to back. I mean, there was a lot of players that for the Lightning that weren't in game two. I think that was a good call for compared to game one. If you want to just go over just go one by one on them?
Yeah, why not? And stray away from the usual way we do it.
Okay. Well, for game one, for the matchup between the Canadiens and the Tampa Bay Lightning, Tampa Bay Lightning lose in overtime, score of 4-3. It was a game where the Lightning saw a lot of penalty kill time, especially a particularly bad penalty late in the game by Guentzel. Lightning were 60-40 deficit in the faceoff, but then the real thing was those the power plays. The Canadiens went 3-for-5, and really just that I think was the main difference here.
I think the main difference was you can maybe come down to coaching. Of course, you know, the actual game on the ice, you got to kill those penalties. But I can't remember. I think it was maybe the last time we did match up with the Canadians in the regular season. We went 7-for-7 on the penalty kill against them. So you got to give credit to Marty St. Louis and his staff and his team as well on doing their homework, how to figure out to get past that penalty kill, because it's been objectively one of the better ones in the league this year. In Montreal, they've got a pretty good power play. So they did their homework when they were stifled against us in the regular season, found a way to break through. And it wasn't even all like set plays or anything like that. And like that Slavkovsky goal, it wasn't, it was a good goal. I said that Slavkovsky goal as if there were not three of them, but the overtime goal, I don't think it was any kind of set power play goal. Like, it was just a wicked shot. He had some open space that just not something that they really practiced, but even still, they found a way to break down that penalty kill. And obviously that's where the issues kind of start and end for the Lightning. Maybe not end, but start for the Lightning was that penalty kill. It was atrocious, and Montreal found a way to just work around it at every single angle.
I mean, ironically enough, the Lightning actually did pretty well on the power play themselves, having 40%, 2 of 5. You know, like you said, with our PK, that was a really big strong suit for us. Slavkovsky got the one timer off to the right side. He got a shot, which is also a one timer from the slot, and then he just on the left side just kind of, I guess, fooled Vasi. It was a really strange release, I think, on the shot that he ended up taking to win the game, and just powered one right past Vasilevsky. I don't know where the I know, you know, some of those passes, especially the one from the slot, I don't know that the Lightning could have done too much to prevent a couple of them, though. The one that went for the original one-timer off to the right, I don't think that there is an ability to get a guy there based on the movement. They had just flowed properly, and you got to have your goalie make an impossible save on it. Vasi almost got over for that one. It's just a really well-placed shot.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, there were, again, I'm focusing on the overtime winner. Obviously, that one was the most savable of the bunch. It was the, you know, just most pedestrian of the shots, in my opinion. And of course, it's the one that, you know, it's the final nail in the coffin for that game as well, where I don't think he was really screened by anything either, anybody or anything. It was just, again, you said, maybe kind of a weird release that caught him off guard. Definitely wasn't his sharpest game. It's not all on him, but 4 goals is a bit rough, and he's had a bit of a rough patch in the playoffs the last couple of years as well.
Well, going, before that game, I think there was a statistic that was posted that he's easily sub 900 in the last, you know, basically since winning the cup. Vasi's sub 900. And this game, he was a .789. save percentage, which is not anywhere near playoff territory, not where you need your goalie to be. I wouldn't put the loss on him. I'd solely put it on the shoulders of the guys taking some of these penalties, because you got to stay out of the box, especially with a hot power play like Montreal has. And, you know, let's see, what was it, a total of 5 power plays, a bunch of others that were 4-on-4. Anytime that you're putting a goalie at a disadvantage like that, of course the save percentage is going to go down.
So I have the stats here since the start of the 2022-2023 playoffs. He's a 4-13 record. That goes for the whole team. An .878 save percentage. Negative 4 goals above expected. Allowed 4 or more goals 8 times in that span. And 11 of 12 OT record. That has since changed since that stat was posted.
Wait, say that again. For OT, he's 11 winning?
He was 11 of 12 since 2022 in OT. Or sorry, lost 11 of 12, not one.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. The Lightning have not had that sort of intensity, it seems like, that helped them win the cups, and especially when it comes to OT. Obviously, this was, you know, one shot away from being a completely different feeling to end the night. It would have been really nice to, you know, slap those guys on their backs that were at the resort and be like, go get them next time, and watch them cringe both on the loss and on the hot skin. Unfortunately, didn't get this one, but you know, a couple nights later, get to rebound and play. Once again, it was an overtime game that went 3-2. Lightning win it in overtime. It was basically a pretty similar stat tracking as far as I'm concerned, with one power play goal for Montreal Canadiens with four attempts, zero power play goals for the Lightning on their three, except for, you know, the penalty minutes were quite a bit reduced. You know, a couple of silly exceptions in this game.
I was about to say the actual number of power plays might have been reduced. The penalty minutes probably went up. Yeah, I mean, of course, a much more fun game, in my opinion, actually from top to bottom when it comes to the rough stuff and everything like that. If I take the result of the game out, I'd say it was definitely a much more fun game. It was a high-intensity game. All the rough stuff, the bashing, the hitting, before, during, and after the whistles, the hitting. It was a really fun game. And yeah, JJ Moser is the OT hero. He's got an interesting stat as well. No, I'm jumping ahead here, but he's the first player in playoff history the first player in NHL history to score his first overtime goal being a Stanley Cup playoff overtime goal, something like that. So
hell of a time to do it,
right? No, and it was a great shot. No, the Montreal Canadiens fans, they are livid against Kirby Dach right now. I don't know if you've seen any of that.
I saw that he had to shut off his Instagram, which is so ridiculous. I mean, you know, talk about a classless bunch of fans. Like,
listen,
I'll how bad they are.
I'll go after the opposing team's players sometimes. That's what sports fans do. I'm never going to go after my guys, even if it is a terrible mistake. Jake Guentzel in game one with that stupid penalty, which I don't know if I'm too sure about. Scott Sabourin, he could have been on the end of that this game as well with that stupid penalty with, what, 2:15 left in regulation. But, hey, we don't have to worry about any of that. We'll leave that to the very, very classy Montreal fans.
To be so vile and vicious that you actually have to get off of social media because of your own fans is I don't know. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And players make mistakes, too. I mean, that wasn't even that. He iced the puck. It's not like it was as big of a mistake. I don't know if you saw the Minnesota game where the puck was kind of sort of shot towards an empty net late in it. And Hughes went to get it. Was you know, his legs were pumping and he had already been on the ice for like 2.5 minutes and it was going to go wide, so he kind of got off the gas there, and then it curled back into the net when he definitely could have gotten it before, and that absolutely sealed the their defeat. But at the same rate, they're down by one. You know, I mean, it's not like it was life altering, and the guy iced the puck. I mean, it wasn't like he shot it into his own net. I just can't believe that they're, you know, that abrasive.
Mm-hmm. And it's honestly, with the Canadiens fans, it's selective on who's playing very well and who's not. Kirby Dach, he doesn't do a whole lot for that team, but Yaroslav Kovsky, it was his turnover that resulted in the icing, essentially. He couldn't get the puck out, the Lightning get it back, and it was Dach that ended up icing it, but it was his turnover that kind of sealed the whole thing. But they're going to be light on him.
Eureka, can you pull up Dan's quote here? Let's see. So Dach's girlfriend actually full-on deleted her social media because of it as well. That's insane that you would attack somebody that much, and like you said, not even fully his fault. That's I mean, I guess that's what happens when you've got a team that hasn't really won in a while, and you're so desperate and hungry that you got to blame it on somebody because your life revolves around it. Maybe a little too close for some of those guys.
That's brutal. It's a brutal way to go about your fandom. But again, you know, attack our players. Go on Scott Sabourin's Instagram. He probably loves it, but doing it against your own players, I really got no sympathy for that.
I do want to talk a little bit about Sabourin because. And the contrast between him on the ice and Geeky on the ice. Geeky's a guy that I would really hope that he would bring that level of energy that you need for an X-factor player to just come out and do something incredible where he scores a highlight reel goal that nobody really expects because he's not a guy that spent an entire season in the NHL this season. But he's got all the offensive ability to do it. He went out there and really was a non-factor. I like Sabourin being in because he's got that grit. He's got that nastiness. He's someone that everyone's going to have to answer to if they play dirty. Yeah, he did have that, you know, that one hit. But usually he's pretty disciplined with the way that, you know, he ends up taking his penalties. I like the guy playing.
I said it when that hit happened. I knew it was erroneous and just a stupid penalty to take, but at the same time, I said, worth it. If we lose the game on that, worth it. You've had Josh Anderson, who's been a pest this whole series, and he's got two goals as well. He's been playing very, very good. And boy, has he been locking Kucherov down on the power play as well. So just,
and you know, completely neutralized Dastu.
Injured Dastu. Just,
and yeah, for those that don't know, he got a penalty for charging when he made contact with Dastu and took him out of the game, and he has yet to return.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's day-to-day, but doubtful to return in the next game or something like that. But regardless, Josh Anderson has been objectively a force to be reckoned with, and after seeing how he got away with a lot of it in Game 1, I totally love and respect the decision to put Scott Sabourin in, because like you, we've talked about this before, Joe, there is a presence when he's on the ice. Who cares if he's, you know, a lot of these fans call him some no-name AHLer. I don't care. He changes the tone of a game, and he did in this game in many different times. Go out there and just, you know, Tasmanian devil, don't even care where the puck is, just go lay some hits, just go throw the body, and that's exactly what he did. If he wants to go with somebody, he'll go anybody on the Canadiens. Anderson, Jack Guy, who else are the tough guys on that team? He'll go with anybody, and he didn't really have to because his presence is felt. Obviously, you know, the nuck-chucking was left to Brandon Hagel, our enforcer, but I do love him being in the lineup. As much as I do love Geeky, his talent is so tantalizing. I don't know if, you know, round one of the playoffs is exactly where he should be inserted.
Well, another interesting question, if you can pull this one up, Eureka. Do you play Sabourin, Geeky, or throw Bjorkstrand in for Game 3?
No. Sabourin.
I completely agree. I don't think that right now there's a place for Geeky if he showed up and exploded into some of the offensive side of things. Yeah, but Bjorkstrand also has been just as non-existent, albeit more defensively responsible than Geeky, but you can't deny that Sabourin's, you know, he's effective. And I said this, I think, pretty much all season long. When Sabourin goes in, I think he's one of the most professional hockey players I have ever seen. And I mean that in the sense that everybody else is going out there to play their game and they're going to get on the ice. He goes with his lunch pail in hand, you know, clocks in, knows his job is to get pucks deep, finish his checks, don't do anything stupid with the puck where you're trying to dance through people. If you have an opportunity to take a shot, sure, you take it, but it's more important that you maintain possession. You don't give the other team a rush. Everything that he does is just, I don't know is how better I can explain it than just an absolute professional hockey player.
And just an A-plus teammate, the way, again, he had my heart from the very first time he stepped on Lightning ice, or was it in South Florida, where it was, what, his first shift or, you know, first game with the Lightning. Probably doesn't know half these guys' names, their first names, just can see it on the back of their jersey. It immediately goes to, you know, kill Aaron Ekblad. Or was it? Yeah, it was Aaron Ekblad.
Again, Eureka, pull up the from Cynthia. I respect the way he looks out for his teammates. That's exactly what you're saying right there.
Exactly. Didn't know Hagel from a hole in the wall and just went out there and took care of business the way that, you know, the Panthers had objectively just been bullying and targeting him for 2 years to this point. Love him, respect him, and just, again, that is the mojo and the swagger that he brings every single time he's on the ice. He is a presence, he has aura, and he will deal with whatever problem there might be. So, yeah, if the other two guys that you can insert in are Bjorkstrand and Geeky, again, you know, I like Geeky, the potential is tantalizing. Bjorkstrand does a whole lot of nothing. So you're asking me if I want, you know, two Connor Sherrys or one, Bob Probert, you know, just name any X-Factor fighter in the league, somebody that has a presence about them, I'm choosing Bob Probert.
especially with the team that's obviously bringing that physicality side. As an X-Factor, like you're saying, Anderson's been that guy for Montreal. He also scored an additional goal that was, you know, just a couple of inches from being a legit goal, even though he tipped it down with a high stick. Great play. Got to the front of the net, tipped it down. It was fortunately for the Lightning just a little bit high, but he's been a guy that has been all over the place, all over our players, and definitely needs to be neutralized if the Lightning are going to win. I mean, I think we've seen pretty clearly that that's the sort of guy that's going to win it for him. It hasn't been Cole Caulfield. It hasn't been like Nick Suzuki. It's not the typical players that you would think for Montreal. It's instead been, you know, basically I think Anderson that's driving that whole team.
Yeah, they're definitely focusing a lot on Suzuki and Caulfield. Caulfield has been very quiet thus far. Obviously, he's a goal scorer. That's what he's gonna do. And they've been very hard on him. Thank the Lord, because he's extremely talented in what he does. And Nick Suzuki, aside from the faceoffs and maybe a couple assists here and there, I thought he's been pretty quiet. He has been destroying them in the faceoff circle, but that's a tale as old as time. losing the faceoff battle.
Yeah, true. And speaking of being quiet, compared to game number one, where we had Slafkovský get a hat trick, in game number two, he was a dash two with no points and may have taken a nap for a minute, thanks to Hagel. Not only was he quiet, he took a little bit of a nap. That fight between the two of them Hagel's had so much energy for the team. That may have been a turning point, not just for that game, but for potentially the series.
Yeah, and we've had this conversation before too about Brandon Hagel. I can't name a fight he's lost. He doesn't do it a lot, but every time he does go someone, it's usually him standing over top of the guy. He knocked out. Like
you got to put it up, Eureka, right now. Sleepy slab.
Oh yeah. Every time he drops the gloves, he is usually the guy standing above the other one. And yeah, what a good punch. The salty Canadiens fans coping about it, like, oh well, Slafkovský landed like six hits. Yeah, to the back of the helmet. Who cares? I mean, you got the one that
slid
mattered.
Off. Yeah. And on top of that, Hagel had the opportunity to continue his ground and pound game, but he didn't. You know, That was the end of the fight. He won the fight. He backed off of him. Slafkovský tried to re-engage, but it was already over.
Yeah, and it wasn't a knockout. Like, you know, of course I'm going to have some fun with it, but, oh, yeah, the that was good. Hagel was emoting like it was a Fortnite lobby. He was going...
Was it too small? Too small.
When he was in the box, he grabbed the rags and he was wiping the tears off his eyes to whoever else was in the box. And then pumping up the crowd.
It was Anderson,
after
right? Because Anderson was cut a little bit.
Oh, maybe that's what it was, wiping the blood off. Ooh, yeah. Man, that's good. Oh, man, he should be the captain.
I mean, going, you know, so game one, he had two goals. He was a plus one. In game two, he had a goal, an assist, was a plus three. I mean, he really did go through.
He had a Gordie Howe hat trick.
And had a fight, yeah, the first ever playoff Tampa Bay Lightning Gordie Howe hat trick. Which, with as many playoff games as the Lightning have had, with as many guys that have been on the team, that actually is something that's, you know, quite surprising to me.
That is very surprising to me. But hey, I'll take it. What better for a guy to do it than Brandon Hagel?
Yeah, absolutely. Another aspect of this game I do want to get to, and we saw it quite a bit in the first game too, is that our power play has looked pretty rough. Now, the scoring did open in game one with another Radish bomb from the point on the power play, which was, you know, it helped get the Lightning into it. They're, you know, seeming kind of stagnant in game one. That was a really big goal. But the power play overall is, I would describe Montreal's PK as just suffocating.
Again, they did their homework there. That's what I opened up the show with, was just them doing their homework, figuring out what to do. And of course, you're going to do that with anybody you're in a series locked up with. And it's been a little early for them to make adjustments. They're going back with, you know, the usual Cooch over on the right wing, Darren Radish at the point in the bumper spot. And who is it? Gensel, you know, kind of the net front guy and behind the net guy. And they really haven't made many adjustments to it yet. And Josh Anderson, again, he's been that guy that has been suffocating Kucherov. He's not like most defense or most players where the defenseman is kind of the quarterback of the power play, it's Kucherov. He's the guy that runs it. He's the guy that distributes everything. Of course, you know, you'll be lucky if you get a goal from him, something like that. But if you neutralize Kucherov, the rest of the power play, what are they going to do? I was glad that Darren Radish is picking up where he left off and got that beautiful, beautiful one-timer goal. But yeah, if the moment you neutralize Kucherov, you can almost kiss that power play goodbye. So hopefully they can figure out, you know, it's been an issue the entire season, what this power play is going through. It's been an issue
for multiple seasons, all the way going back to days with Steven Stamkos, in my opinion. And I think the solution is what, you know, I've said in the past when it does, is that they want to set up this power play with fixed positions and pull defensive players out of basically out of position by moving the puck, and they're putting it from low to high and over and back and up, making the shift happen with the defensive players that way. When that happens, they then look for seams. The trouble is they're not getting enough time when they get the puck down low, for instance, in order to make that pass. The Canadians are moving way too fast, and now you're flat-footed when you've got the puck, and they're getting eaten up. The puck's getting trapped on the boards and then cleared. So with that, I think that I've been saying for a long time, they need a dynamic power play as like their, not power play two as in the players on the ice, but as their strategy, where they're actually moving. They're cycling not just the puck, but they're moving players around in order to, you know, find these gaps, because you can't get to a guy as quickly as a defensive player if he's not next to you. You know, you got to move a lot further and you have to accelerate up to his speed.
Absolutely. I can't remember if it was this year or last season. Wow, it's been an entire season in 2025-26 already, but it was Kucherov. They moved him over kind of to the left wing spot to be strictly a disher. I think it was maybe Jake Guentzel took that right wing one-timer position, and it seemed to work pretty well. It was in the middle of a power play slump, and it seemed to work pretty well. And once they got that rolling, of course, teams are going to try and catch up onto it and figure it out. And then they moved Kucherov back over to his usual spot and probably worked for a little bit after that. But here we are again. We're back in that spot where teams can just read it. They know what's coming. Obviously,
why do you think that they're reading it, to be fair? I think they're just, as soon as the puck gets moved, they're crashing that guy as hard as they possibly can with amazing amount of intensity, expending way more energy than you would in a regular season game, because you've got a full 82-game season. Here they're playing with their lives, in the playoffs, where maybe this is the last game that we're going to play, and they're getting there and not allowing them to have the space in order to make the pretty passes.
Yeah, yeah. If I had an opinion, Braden Point has been largely ineffective throughout this entire season, but specifically these two games, there was only one or two chances where I was like, wow, he looked like Braden Point right there. Obviously, it's not going to change the whole dynamic of the power play, but I would swap him out with Corey Perry, put him in the bumper, just kind of in front of the net or something like that. Just put him in with that unit. You know how he is, you know, that close to the net, big body, big frame, just get a dirty, greasy goal, something like that. If he seems to always be much more ready for a puck whenever it comes from, you know, a Kucherov or a rebound chance off a blast from Darren Radish. That's kind of my adjustment that I'm thinking about making right now if I'm John Cooper. Obviously, I'm not. Obviously, his spot on that power play is pretty concrete, but you're going to have to do something to adjust to it. And, you know, why not, you know, mix it up, throw the worm in there? I don't know what I would do if I'm hearing that as the Montreal plan. Like, they're putting Corey Perry on power play one. They're putting him where? It'd just be kind of jarring to me seeing that in live action. And I think it could pay some dividends, maybe wake Braden Point up a little bit too.
I mean, it certainly isn't a bad thing to hear, because we've been seeing Hagel in it more and more, playing basically that left wing sort of role, which isn't really something he's accustomed to. I think he's got like two power play goals in his career. On the Lightning, maybe. I mean, it was comical, right? I think that this season he got his first one, right? It was he just never is on the power play. So having with the number of kills that we have, with how much that we need Hagel, having somebody else in that spot so he gets a couple of minutes of resting on the bench. You know, he's a Swiss Army knife, Hagel is, but you don't want to wear him dull.
Put Dominic James there.
And Dominic James has only got two games back after being off for since when was his injury? Can you recall?
It was like February. It was like late February. He missed the entire break, right?
Mm-hmm. That's a long time to be off the ice. So I would love to see him become an X factor. Lisa just wrote that right as if she was reading your mind. Ooh. Oh, the next one there.
Maybe he's a James spark plug.
Yeah, I've been saying that he needs to be the guy that also goes through and almost had that really great play. Who was that with? That was with Gord. Mm-hmm. Oh man, that was. That could have been the difference between game one winning and that was game one, right? Where they went down really late in the third. That could have won the game for the Lightning right there, which would have been completely different. But this Montreal Canadiens team are definitely playing with some heart. As long as the Lightning can match them, I'm not sure that the Montreal's got much more that they are going to be able to show the Lightning.
I really hope not. Again, they're doing a good job of neutralizing those top guys and those top lines, but it's going to be an uphill battle going from here. You got two games in Tampa and you split that series. Now you go to Montreal, objectively a top three building in the league. Of course, they do pretty good, in away arenas. I'm not too stressed about it. But again, the Bell Center during the playoffs is rocking. You got to give it to these toxic fans. They know how to show out and show up in that building. So it'll be difficult. You don't get that. You don't get last change, of course, for the actual tactics of it. But man, it's going to be real tough playing in that Bell Center.
Let's see if I have the schedule up right here. It's kind of strange the way they have it with two days off between games, switching between home and away. I kind of like it a little bit because it spreads things out in this first round where you get to see a little bit more hockey. It gets to be played here. So I don't mind it too much, but it's a Friday game and a Sunday game, both at 7 p.m. for our look ahead. I mean, it's like there's too much to look ahead to for this next week, and we'll come back in on Monday as well with coverage on those first two. You mentioned how loud it can be in the Bell Center. Obviously, the fans play a part, but one of the things that I love absolutely most about Kucherov, which obviously is starting to rub off quite a bit on Hagel, is being the villain. And I can't think of an environment that Kucherov thrives more in than when he's being booed. And I can't wait to see the worst of him.
That is a very good point because he's heating up. He got that goal. He was in a terrible, terrible playoff goal slump. And him getting that goal, I mean, it felt great for me. I could only imagine how good it felt for him. I know how much he, I don't care about this, I don't care about that, just the vibe he gives. But I'm sure that was definitely weighing down on him. So getting that goal, you see what happens in the playoffs when he doesn't get a goal. He's been unleashed. He's been unlocked. Hopefully he can keep that up, keep some goal scoring or just, be the playmaking menace. And man, if he can pull out that shush in the crowd again, how electric would that be in the Bell Center? So yeah, that is an excellent point you do bring up, Joe. Being the villain, he loves being the villain. So no better place in the world because they hated him before. They hated him from 2021 where objectively he got under their skin. Bad. They still talk about it to this day.
Smoked him on the ice, smoked him in the post game presser. Oh, I mean, that was like the ultimate own of a player. And that was where he embraced being the villain more than anything right then. Why don't we get to the Nikita Kucherov's three stars of the week segment since we're talking about him. We got a couple guys I think you would, you might agree with, and if you don't, leave us some notes in the comments, and we'd love to hear your opinions on it. But coming in for our number three star, see if we can get this posted on here. All right, Jake Guentzel, number three star of the week. In the first game, Guentzel ended up having three assists as a plus one. In game number two, he continued with an additional assist with a plus one, 25 minutes of ice time in that second game, leading the way on offense, dynamic player, and our third star.
It's a shame that that penalty in game one is kind of, you know, a black cloud hanging over him, but you don't hold that to a player like Jake Guentzel. All the positives, all the good things he does, 4 points or two games so far, all assists. He's a playoff player. Go look at his playoff numbers. He was the best player last year against the Panthers in a very, very rough series. Objectively, I think the best player we've had. So another guy that, you know, just hopefully unlocks, you know, he's been maybe not a little quiet, but, you know, he's just not been fully unlocked yet. Playoff Jake Guentzel is, again, a different animal, and to already be putting up these numbers and playing pretty well, filling in on the PK a little bit too when, who was it, Hagel was in the box as well. Just that Swiss Army knife kind of player. Maybe not brash and buzzsaw like Brandon Hagel. He does everything very quietly and understatedly. 4 points or two games again, very, very good. Hopefully we see more from Jake Guentzel.
You said it well. He's definitely one of those guys that has been so clutch all season long. So Jake Guentzel for our exactly, Lisa. Guentz has been an all-star all season long. Moving on to number two, though, this is one that I think was very appropriate with Darren Radish coming in, getting some momentum for the Lightning with the leadoff goal of the playoffs, but also playing some huge minutes. I don't want to do the full math, but I think he leads the team with time on ice. He was, I think, maybe about a minute more than anybody else over the two games, and playing some really hard roles, plus two in the second game. Darren Radish really is stepped into this, you know, lead defensive role essentially for the Lightning and continuing it through the playoffs.
And it's not the only thing he steps into. He steps into all of his shots. Again, that's what we know him for. He's one of the best shooters in the league, and, you know, getting us on the board on the power play, you can't ask for much more than that with how, you know, hit or miss it can be, mostly miss. No, good for him. Just the transition he's had as a player. He is earning himself, you know, millions of dollars every waking minute that he's on the ice. And that could be a good thing or a bad thing. Of course, I'd love to keep him, but that's a problem for another day. No, the way that he has stepped into this role, you know, it's one thing. Hey, you know, Victor Hedman, he's injured. He's in and out this whole season. Can you fill that number one role? Yeah, sure. Can you do it in the playoffs? A little bit of a different beast. Can you shut these guys down? Can you be that number one we rely on defenseman? Absolutely. He's stepping into it great. Of course, he's not the shutdown guy. You put that on J.J. Moser or Ryan McDonough or something like that, but still playing, what is he at, or over an hour of ice time through these two games?
He's at just, yeah, he's just under.
Okay. I mean, still, you know, at, you know, nearly an hour of ice time through two games, that's pretty darn good. Just the way that he can take any situation and turn it into gold, it seems. Love him, and I'd love to keep him.
I couldn't agree more. It's definitely going to be hard to keep with the prices that Darren Radish is going to be commanding. You know, but if high prices are a problem for you, you should visit shop.rblrsports.com and get a lower price by using Bolts10. Is it Bolts10 for 10% off of all of the gear? There it is. Promo code Bolts for 10% off of all the gear in shop.rblrsports.com with Lightning inspired merch. Now's the time to get in on the action and support your local favorite podcast, as well as repping your team. And with that, we'll move to the number one star of the week. Should be no surprise. Everyone's number one. He should be the number one star for the NHL. Brandon Hagel. Wow. Wow. I think he's number two in penalty, or not in penalty minutes, in ice time for the Lightning. Got a Gordie Howe hat trick. Two goals in his first game. This has been the, you know, probably, I think it's safe to say now, the best signing that the Lightning have probably ever had. And he's the driving force, the heart and soul of this team right now.
He is absolutely, objectively, unquestionably the best acquisition the Lightning have ever had. He's so good. Even Morgan's getting excited. I'm sorry if you can hear her. But no, he is my early season, way too early postseason vote for the Conn Smythe winner. Just what he brings with his offensive touch, that crazy goal he scored in game two, just that weird angle, whatever it was. Hey, goal scorers find a way to score goals. And then just what he does away from the puck with Slavkovsky right there, you know, dropping him. A lot of people are saying, oh, well, he wouldn't do that against Jacki. No, he wouldn't. He's not a fighter. He's a goal scorer. He's a playmaker. He's a penalty killer. He's not a fighter. That's the kind of guy he is. He does everything. He kills these penalties. Even if it wasn't great in game one, he's the kind of guy that you're excited when he gets the puck on the penalty kill. You're excited when he gets the puck on the power play. He might not score it, but he'll probably dish it off somewhere. He is as clutch as they come. He's got that clutch gene that Jake Guentzel has, and just every single thing about him. He gets better and better and better every single year. I remember when I thought Nick Paul was probably the better player when we got them at the same trade deadline, and you know, they've definitely switched spots tremendously. Nothing against Nick Paul. I still think he's great, but they were about the same level of player. Man, he has just gotten better and better and better. $6.5 million for the next 6 years for Brandon Hagel. Kucherov, he's on a great deal. This might be the best deal in the league.
It's hard to argue anyone else is going to be more impactful per dollar in the league, because without him, we would be definitely down two games already, and probably wouldn't have even made it to OT in the first one. Yeah, I mean, he's leading by example, that's for sure. You know, absolutely love it. I do want to speak a little bit, you know, before we wrap here, on what we want to see out of some of our players in these next couple games, because we have had some guys that are relatively quiet. You mentioned one of them with Nick Paul. Pointer's been, you know, maybe he's been accounted for pretty well, so he hasn't had as many opportunities, but he's been relatively quiet. And also, I really want to see more out of Sorelli.
I could see the Sorelli. He's been pretty quiet. Nick Paul, I think, you know, he knows what his role is. I think he's been pretty effective. He's the face-off guy. He got a really good shot off in game two as well that I thought was wire in the back of the net, but it was a great save by Dobesh. So nothing against him. But, yeah, Braden Point, he's the big one. You're not going to win the cup without him, you know, playing at least, you know, to half of his abilities. And right now I think he's a bit of a ghost. He's been that way this whole season, barring a couple, you know, week or 2 week stretches. You need to see more from him. Obviously they're going to go for the Guentzels, the Kucherov. He's got a little bit more room to skate around. And of course those top two lines are a little silly right now. They're going to be playing with them. John Cooper is, I'd love to see more out of him. As far as the defense goes, I think they've been actually pretty rock solid steady. So it really is just the forward group, the Yanni Gourdes of the world. He's been great. He was a potential on this, on the Stars list there. He's been throwing the Gourde around. At least it says Gourde needs to come out of hiding. I think he has made himself readily available. I'm not bugged.
I'd say
about
his offensive side hasn't been there, right? He doesn't have points, you know, like the other guys. Does he have points in the first game? No points so. Thus far. But I do agree with you. Like he's making sure that he's out there. He was mocking
Anderson.
No, Jacki. He was mocking Jacki, you know, on the ice there. So I mean, you know, he's got that. I don't know. It's like a bulldog sort of tenacity, and he's a wrecking ball when he's playing. I think he's serving his role, you know, pretty well, especially given who he's playing with. I love to see him score. You know, obviously it's the depth scoring that really matters when you're in the playoffs, because everybody's focusing, keying in on the big guys, keying in on, like you said, Guentzel, Kucherov, Pointer. They're going to be completely matched up against with the top defensive people on the other team. And when you start getting guys like Yanni Gourde going and scoring, that's where you can make a huge difference in terms of getting those gritty extra goals. So it'd be awesome if he can get in there and get some goals. But even when he doesn't, I think he's been doing a really good job of just stirring it up. And this team is not a team that's going to get pushed around like we've seen in previous years.
Absolutely not. It is a far cry from what it was this time last year, again, with just guys like Sabourin in the lineup, just
bringing a whole different level of mojo. The fourth line, I'm not exactly worried about him and Gergensen's. They bring the hits. They'll bring the boom if they need to, and just that tenacity is the best word for it. And Gord, he's doing it when he was going at a Jack Eye with a smile on his face. I'm not worried about them in the slightest. But yeah, Anthony Cirelli, also an interesting answer, like you said. Love to see him heat up a bit. And I don't think he's been playing bad or anything, but just a little quiet as well through these games. But I think he's got his hands full with, you know, Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki as well. So obviously when you've got two guys you're trying to shut down, two elite players you're trying to shut down, you're going to have your hands full. You might be a little quiet and open up the room for some other guys.
I mean, that makes a lot of sense. You know, get that depth scoring and allow Cirelli to do what he does best, which is being a two-way forward. He's a center that errs on the side of caution and shuts guys down rather than extending offensive zone time at a higher margin of risk. So yeah, you definitely have a point there. I guess maybe Nick Paul and Dominic James can be the guys that start getting some points on the board as well. You have anything that you're looking forward to before the next game?
Before the next game, no. I want the next game already. Obviously, I've been, you know, having a lot of fun with all the other series going around right now. To me, there's no boring series. Even the ones that are on the edge of sweeps, I'm having a good time with. Everything is kind of going the way that I wanted it to, maybe except the Avs-Kings series. But having a big old fun time with these playoffs so far.
Well, I think we covered the Lightning pretty well. We can spend the, you know, since we still have a little bit of time here, we can spend the next couple minutes looking around the league. Yeah. And there's been some interesting ones, especially was it that the first, you have to remind me, was the first Buffalo game where Buffalo was down by two goals entering the third period and they came back and won.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Buffalo showing some heart in that one.
It was a really fun game to just go back and watch. Obviously, I was tied up with the Lightning game was on at the time. Buffalo's actually down 1-0 right now. Tanner Janot is the goal scorer for Boston, oddly enough. And the Hurricanes, they're actually up on the Sens right now. They're looking to get that sweep on the road. But yeah, that Buffalo series has been electric. I'm so happy for the city of Buffalo, just how their building was. It's been, what was it, like 14, 15 years since they experienced playoff hockey. Obviously, they're going to have a lot of fun with this. Hopefully, they can make it a long series against Boston.
Did you fill out a playoff bracket?
I did not.
You did not? I did, and I have to admit that I don't have a single upset in the first round, which, not a single one, but now looking, you know, Pittsburgh-Philly, I didn't expect it to be going the way that is with Pittsburgh just not being able to bring it.
That's why you can't trust seeding, man. Philly, they were somehow underratedly, quietly one of the best teams post-Olympic break. Nobody saw them coming. Nobody was like, wow, they're putting together, you know, they're 14-4 over that 20-game stretch. Nobody really saw it. Like, they didn't put together any, like, huge win streaks, but they would, you know, win a couple games, lose one. Win a couple games, lose one. They just snuck their way in, and they were coming into that into these playoffs white hot, just so quietly though. So it's kind of going the way that I expected it to. I don't think Pittsburgh, the way that their team is constructed, is meant for playoff hockey, as opposed to how Philly's absolutely is. You talk about suffocating, they're suffocating. It's a boring watch, but again, boring hockey does win you games, and that's what they're doing.
They're up in the series 3-0 against Pittsburgh, talking about potentially a sweep. Moving back over to the West Coast, though, Lisa had a comment with go Dallas, because she thinks it's the best chance for Colorado to get eliminated. I think I have my playoff bracket. I mean, I guess it would kind of be a rematch either way, right? Of a prior cup. Of course, Lightning go all the way. I mean, that's a given. But I think it was Colorado over Dallas. That's kind of a hard one where, you know, if you shut down the right guys, if you're Dallas, then, you know, you can definitely beat Colorado. But Colorado's been really good all season. Colorado's up 2-0, 2-0 against the Kings, and Dallas is up 2-1 against Minnesota Wild.
They've been struggling against the Kings. I did tune into some of the both of those games. Obviously, it's gone their way both times, but they've been struggling. You know, there's been some good chances, but for the most part, they haven't really been playing that run-and-gun, free-willy style of hockey that they, you know, kind of known for this season. As far as the Dallas-Minnesota series goes...
Just real quick, both games were 2-1 for the Avs. The second game went to overtime, 2-1, so they were really tight games.
And the Kings, they were close to stealing that second game. They scored with 6 minutes left, and they were trying to play prevent defense, and it just did not work out for them. And then Colorado, you know, ties it up and then wins it in overtime. But I'm not saying that it's been easy for Colorado. But again, as far as Minnesota and Dallas goes, I'm cheering for Minnesota in this series. I'd love for them to make it out of the first round. It's criminal that this is a first-round series, but I think... You know, again, this is my, you know, I hate Colorado train right here. As far as who gets to upset Dallas, I think the funniest outcome would be Dallas beating Colorado again. I think that would just be hilarious.
Any chance on Utah coming out of their matchup against the Golden Knights?
That one's the most unpredictable, in my opinion. Obviously, cheering for Utah. Everyone likes to hate the Knights, but I'd love to see them go on a little, you know, a little run here. That one is as good of a coin flip to me. I have no idea who's going to come out of it. I think it probably goes to Game 7 OT, just the way that these two teams play. You know, it's been very close games through. Of course, all these games have been pretty close. There's been no blowouts, really, but that one is the most unpredictable, in my opinion.
All right, and the last one to talk about over there is Edmonton, Anaheim. Good old Killer being on Anaheim. That series is tied. I have... been so disrespectful of Anaheim, just blowing them off as if they're not a real team, thinking as if we're still a couple years ago where they couldn't even come close to sniffing a wild card playoff spot. But, you know, they're taking it to Edmonton's 1-1. I didn't expect this out of them.
I didn't either. Happy to see Anaheim doing pretty well. They kind of deserve it. But it's Edmonton's destiny. They've got to get McDavid a cup. I really hope that they do. There's no chance you go to back-to-back cup finals and then get bounced by the team that hasn't made the playoffs since 2017, 2018. A young team, inexperienced team. I just can't see that happening. It's goaltending is the only issue that's going to be standing in the way of Edmonton.
It's always been their issue, right?
Yeah.
You know, if they don't... What's the definition of insanity? Trying the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Mm-hmm. They haven't cleaned up their act by now on that. Then I don't think they deserve to get to the Western Conference Final again. Well, any other notes for today?
No, block out the crowd noise in the Bell Center for these two games coming up. Hopefully, you walk out of there with a chokehold on the series. 3-1 would be great, but I will take what I can get from these guys. Just play great.
And I can't wait to see Nikita Kucherov embrace his inner villain and absolutely silence that crowd himself. Thank you very much for joining us. Be sure to like and subscribe. We'll see you on Monday when we recap the next two games. As always, go Bolts.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.